going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, it is the Going Deep podcast, and it is no longer Super Wildcard Weekend. It is the divisional round in the NFL where teams are trying to continue their journey to the Super Bowl in Las Vegas. And what an elite eight we have. Some elite quarterbacks, no doubt. And I love the quarterback storylines we got. We got two first-year starters coming off of literally perfect games, perfect passer ratings in their first games. We have two former number one overall picks who are actually playing each other, but playing for different teams that picked them number one and rehabbing their careers in different cities. We've got two MVP caliber players in Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, all world elite talents, but haven't been able to get over the hump. And forget about winning a Super Bowl, haven't been able to get to one, and now they are 1 and 2 seeds in the AFC. You've got Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy, and if he has a healthy ligament in his elbow, maybe he takes that stacked Niners team to the Super Bowl. And then, of course, you've got the guy who's not really playing against his competition right now. He's playing against history. That's Patrick Mahomes, because he is the baby goat for me. He is chasing Brady. He's not chasing the other quarterbacks he's playing with. He has the conch. He is in his own tier, so much so that this is wild. In terms of stats, Patrick Mahomes already has more playoff victories than Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, who, if he called up Pat McAfee today and said he's retiring, he would be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Patrick Mahomes has more playoff victories than him already. He's quickly climbing the ranks in terms of playoff performances, playoff wins. No matter the metric, he's there. He won his 12th career playoff start, you know, last week, tying Tom Brady for the most in his first 7 seasons. Hey, guess what? He's been a starter for only 6 seasons. This guy is 28 years old and already has 8th most playoff wins by a quarterback in league history. If he's able to continue to win and climb the ladder, for example, a win this week against the Buffalo Bills, he would then tie Brett Favre and Big Ben Roethlisberger for 6th. But those Buffalo Bills stand in the way. And the other narrative I love right now is because it's not just franchises or QBs that are in the postseason. It's cities, it's fan bases, and two fan bases and cities that really, really are desperate for some success are the Detroit Lions and the Buffalo Bills. Very different ways, but hardworking, tough fan bases and cities who have football teams that reflect them. Will they reflect them and meet up in the Super Bowl, or at least advance and are able to play one more week? That's what I'm here to find out. That's what we're going to go deep on. So we're going to talk to two hardworking journalists in those very markets. First up, why don't we talk about the Lions? So many people in the Windsor, Chatham area love them some Detroit Lions. And no matter where you live in Canada, how do you not love the lovable Lions and Dan Campbell? Well, we're going to talk to Lions beat writer Justin Rogers about what it's like in Detroit, Michigan. And could the Lions get on a run that has the whole world talking about it? Detroit football talk. I'm going deep. So, Justin, it's an exciting time to be a Lions fan, arguably the most exciting time in the last 3 decades. There are many Canadians, you know, on the border, Detroit, Windsor area that are excited for this time of year for the Lions. What's the vibe for those who aren't in the vicinity? What's the vibe like in and around Detroit and Michigan with the way the Lions are playing right now?
Yeah, look, it's electric. And, you know, I can go back to earlier in the season where I was out to dinner with a friend and, you know, was just looking around and started noticing more and more Lions gear, you know, in terms of just people wearing it in everyday life. And that is a little unusual around these parts. You know, the Red Wings or the Detroit Tigers Old English D, very, very common in these parts. But, you know, fans have been slow to I guess, adjust to the success those teams have. And not that they haven't always had support, full stadiums, but in terms of showing that out publicly, it's been unusual, I would say, to an unusual degree this season. And so, you know, as the success has continued and as they've been able to knock out some of these infamous streaks of no division title for 32 years, no playoff win for 32 years, it's, you know, it's only picked up steam. And really, if you look at the reaction to the crowd, not just from the players or from the people that are there regularly, but to the outsiders, to the Peter Kings of the world, saying it was one of the five most electric atmospheres he's ever experienced covering NFL in 40 years, really captures, I guess, the sentiment of, you know, how hungry this fan base is. Because look, in the United States, NFL is king, and this fan base has been waiting so long to have something to cheer for.
Yeah, and it gives them a reason to not think about the Detroit Pistons, which is ideal. I mean, it's a banner time in football in general, obviously with the run that Michigan was on. But is there, you know, a crossover in terms of the football fan base, or are they distinct and separate?
No, there's a crossover. And look, we have two very prominent national programs in Michigan and Michigan State, and there is a clear divide among that group, both on the basketball and football realms, where, you know, both schools have had a lot of success in the last two decades plus. But, you know, I would say that a large chunk of Michigan fans, given the university's location to Metro Detroit, is a little bit closer. I think there's a pretty large overlap between those two markets.
Talking about, you know, the team on the field, you know, there are so many great characters on this team. And you know, if there was a Disney-like movie or a Netflix-like documentary, there would be so many central characters, many on the field. But I want to start in the front office with Brad Holmes and everything that he's had to do to get this position. But the real intentional way that he's built the franchise and the roster in terms of character and grit, you know, what sticks out to you about his ascension and what that's meant for the football team and the reflection of it relative to the city that it's in?
Yeah, look, the hire was smart because the best way to orchestrate a rebuild and to sustain long-term success in the NFL is to do so through the draft. I think we've seen it time and time again. Yeah, you can plug holes and find short-term success through, you know, a spending spree in free agency. But if you really want sustainable success for decades to follow the Patriots or the Steelers or the Packers, those organizations seem to find a way year after year after year to get there, or their lulls are very short. You have to do it with good drafting. And so to go out and get a guy who is a draft expert, a guy that was the director of college scouting for a quality franchise for a decade, who had plenty of hits at all levels of that draft over the years, and to bring that in as the central building point of your franchise. And if you look at this Lions roster from the time Holmes got here, you know, there's 10 or so guys that are still holdovers, you know, some guys that he's re-signed that fit the grit attitude, if you will, of what he envisioned. But so much of this roster was built through the draft, and, you know, really big time hits, guys like Penei Sewell and Amon-Ra St. Brown, guys that are now in the Pro Bowl and all pro conversations. But dipping down even to the middle and late rounds, he's finding these guys that are making up his rosters, not just the starters, but the depth. And that's where this Lions team is so different than, you know, some of the past. So, you know, great players have rolled through this town. We all know it. Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders, two of the greatest of all time at their position, if not the greatest. But it's the lack of one through player 53 depth that the Lions have lacked. And this roster exhibits that better than any. And it's really a credit to Brad Holmes and his staff with what they've done through the draft. And, you know, now moving into this third season, they've moved into that free agency realm of selectively plucking pieces with the dollars they have to fill those remaining holes, guys like David Montgomery and Cam Sutton, to really round out this roster with the veteran voices they need.
Well, another veteran that they brought in, young veteran, I suppose, would be Jared Goff, in terms of acquiring him, you know, in exchange for, you know, Matt Stafford. He would be another central figure of that story. And now he was a former first overall pick going up against another first overall pick, you know, who's rehabbing his career. How much of what Goff has done can solidify him having, you know, a long future in Detroit? Has he done enough at this point? Dan Campbell says, you know, post game, how he feels about him to the team in the locker room. But you know, do you see him being the starter here for a while?
Yeah, I think let's go back to when the trade was made for Matthew Stafford, and the Lions got back not just Jared Goff, but two first round picks and a third round pick, which, if it was only the draft equity coming back, I still think you look at it and go, that was a pretty good deal for a quarterback that was aging, who had some back issues the previous 2 years. You get Jared Goff on top of it and you think, okay, well, you know, the Rams needed to trade him, and, you know, there needed to be some kind of salary equability in this deal to make it work. And so your initial thought is, well, maybe it's just a straight salary move. Maybe Goff is a bridge to their, whoever the real heir apparent is to Matthew Stafford when they get to that side of the rebuild. And through 1 year, you know, I think you still kind of were in that mindset. You know, Goff had a very brutal 2021, and I will say this, of no real fault of his own. I mean, the Lions put very little around him as they stripped that roster to its studs, and he just didn't have any weapons to operate with. But you move into that second season, and this year being the third, and you pair him with Ben Johnson, you know, a first-year coordinator at the time who's, you know, clearly got a brilliant mind for the game. You give Goff some more weapons beyond the quality offensive line that he kind of started with in terms of pass catchers and running backs. And you see a return of Goff to that level that he was playing at in 2017 and 2018 when he was leading the Rams to division titles, leading them to a Super Bowl. You know, the numbers in terms of yards and completion percentage and touchdowns, and they're all in that sphere. And so, you know, he is, I think, comfortably in that conversation as a top 10 quarterback. You know, is he, you know, ever going to be an elite guy in the Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow classification? No, probably not. But, you know, I think Goff has proven early in his career and proven what he's doing now in terms of what has not been accomplished by any Lions quarterback in, you know, 30 plus years, that he is a good enough player to win with. And that includes winning a potential Super Bowl. So yeah, as his contract comes up here in another year after this one, I fully, fully expect the Lions to get an extension done, and to get that extension done probably this offseason. And so, you know, I still kind of have to sit down and start, you know, kind of really looking at those numbers and how they compare and contrast to some other guys that got extensions in the recent years. But, you know, you're probably looking at a 3 to 5 year deal, depending on what he and his agent are looking for in terms of long-term security. And, you know, probably in that range of 45 to potentially even up to $50 million a year.
On the field, the only thing that's really given him trouble historically has been pressure. Not a great recipe when a Todd Bowles defense comes to town. When you look on the field at the matchup with the Bucs and the Lions offense led by Goff, what comes to mind?
Well, you know, the good thing about, first of all, I think most quarterbacks you would find struggle under pressure, right?
Yes.
That's probably a little bit more true with a quarterback of Goff's skill set. You're not alone in this, but the mobility factor with him, you know, adds to those struggles because he just can't bail and run. It's just not his primary skill set. So he's a guy that needs to operate more from a clean pocket than some other guys, but that's where the Lions are strong. They have one of the best, if not the best, offensive lines of football. It's led by a great interior of veterans, including Pro Bowl center Frank Ragnow, who's going to be in charge of identifying those blitzes and has done, you know, a phenomenal job at that for years. He's got maybe the best tandem, Goff that is, has maybe the best tackle tandem in football, and Penei Sewell, an all-pro, and the perennially underrated Taylor Decker. So, you know, it really starts there for the Lions. You know, the pass game is something I'm not particularly worried about. You know, I think they find a way, and they proved that in week six when they faced the Bucs and literally had none of their run game that they normally would have. Jahmyr Gibbs was out for that contest. David Montgomery suffered a rib injury at the end of the first quarter and missed the final three quarters of the game. What does Goff do? He steps in, he throws for a season high 353 yards. He protects the football. He leads them to a 20-6 win. The pass game, I don't think, is the concern. It is, can the Lions find success on the ground? They have built this team to be balanced. They've built this team to run out the clock when they need to. They've built this team to, you know, just straight run the ball for an entire drive to get everything else back on track. But this Bucs team is stout against the run. They always are under Bowles, but, you know, when you have a defensive tackle like Vita Vea in the middle there that dictates where you can and you cannot run the ball, it becomes a big challenge. The Lions have run the ball better than they have at any point since Barry Sanders retired this season. Both those running backs are really good, and they complement each other very well. They're in a little tiny bit of a rut here in the last couple weeks, and I think that their ability to get out of that rut, to get back to doing what they've done all season long, and to take the Bucs out of what they've done defensively is going to be one of the key facets of whether the Lions can win this game and win this game comfortably.
What will help would be Ben Johnson and the amount of pre-snap motion he uses to give his QBs tells on what the defense is doing. To me, outside of Dan Campbell, who gets a lot of attention, the coordinators have been stars on this team. Ben Johnson on the offensive side, Aaron Glenn on the defensive side, which is why both are coveted at this time of year for potential head coaching vacancies. And I always find this dance somewhat delicate. You know, great thing on your resume would be advancing in the playoffs, but you're also preparing to pitch yourself to lead another organization. How do you manage that time and distraction? What do you expect in terms of these individual coveted coordinators and their ability to potentially be elsewhere and not part of the Lions' future?
Yeah, I think it's almost a lock that Ben Johnson goes somewhere. You know, the tea leaves right now point to Washington. And I think, you know, of the available jobs, that one is extremely appealing with the number two pick and the most cap space of any team in the NFL. You know, that sets you up quickly to get the franchise moving in the right direction while getting in the all important quarterback position that you know, you would have your pick of the litter almost of prospects. And so, you know, if he has that opportunity, I think it's a really good one for him. But I look at, you know, last year, a lot of people thought Johnson would get the job. But the reality of that situation was he went and climbed the organizational chart so quickly, going from position coach to coordinator to head coaching candidate, that he really never had time to prepare himself for the possibility. And you can go into those interviews and not be prepared and take yourself out of candidacy really quickly by just not having the knowledge or the answer. You don't know what you don't know until you experience it. So, you know, Johnson went through that last year. I don't think it was a particularly great interview cycle from him from things I heard, but now he's prepared. Now there are more openings. Now he has another year of seasoning under his belt and a year to really spend thinking about how to, you know, best set himself up for the job. So I truly believe that he's all but gone, unless for whatever reason he just decides he doesn't want to go that path. I have a tough time seeing that now, but, you know, weirder things have happened. In terms of Glenn, I think it's more 50-50, 40-60. You know, some of those jobs that are open are, there's some big names out there, right? It's Bill Belichick, there's Jim Harbaugh. Like, they're going to get claimed up, and so it's going to boil down to two or three jobs remaining. Glenn has also gone through that cycle a few times. He's got some things that are absolutely working in his favor. The NFLPA survey that just came out, 1,600 players. Glenn was ranked by players as the coordinator they most respected and enjoyed playing for. His organizational skills are phenomenal. But in terms of just sheer results on the field with the Lions defense. He was handed the keys to a very, very young unit. Their growth, their development, their production has been slower to come than what Johnson has seen. And so, you know, there's ultimately this marketing factor teams are considering when hiring a coach. And you have to energize your fan base with your decision. And Glenn might be a little harder of a sell right now in that regard, because fans can just point to his statistics and go, well, the Detroit Lions ranked 20th in scoring defense. Like, what are we really seeing this guy? So maybe it'll take another year for Aaron Glenn, you know, one where he can produce a top 10 defense as his young stars develop, and, you know, hopefully for him gets some better pieces in the secondary that's really held back Detroit, I think, from taking that next step.
Well, a good cover letter for that resume would be a great performance in the divisional round. Lions fans aren't looking to the future. They're looking at the game this weekend. We know that you'll be covering it, and the weather in Detroit is similar to the weather in most of Canada. So selfishly for you, I'm hoping that you can get to Las Vegas in a couple weeks and enjoy a good run. But thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much to Justin Rogers, Lions beat reporter for the Detroit News. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Rogers is the handle. Let's reset, take a break, and reconvene with the conversation for the lovable loser that maybe has enough strength to punch their ticket back to the Super Bowl in the AFC after we had that conversation about that team in the NFC. Obviously, in the AFC, that would be the Buffalo Bills, one of Canada's favorite teams. They could be world champs. We're going to talk Bills after the break.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
So like in many areas in Canada right now, in Buffalo, there is a lot of snow and it is very cold, but that is not going to stop the football game that is going down on Sunday. Unlike last week, looks like this game won't be postponed because of that cold and snow. Someone who's covered all of the ups and downs, whether it's weather or the actual play on the field of the Buffalo Bills, is Nate Gary, host for WGR 550 in Buffalo, is giving you your pregame, halftime, and postgame show news. And there's been some news coming out of Buffalo surrounding this team all year, all week, frankly, in terms of who is and isn't healthy. We're going to go into the health of the roster and the health of their ability to keep this thing moving to another Super Bowl appearance for the Buffalo Bills. Let's go deep on Bills Mafia with Nate Gear. So Nate, besides the constant updates of lakefront snow effect and everyone becoming a at-home meteorologist, what is the vibe, the emotion, the feeling in Western New York, in Buffalo about the stakes of this upcoming game and the opportunity to finally host the Chiefs?
Yeah, well, listen, as a big golfer here in Western New York, I'm basically a part-time meteorologist, so I've had this weather system on lock. But yeah, let me tell you, I mean, I was just saying to the producer, like, the vibe in the city is like, everyone's very excited, right? But I also think there's this just general level of nervousness and concern, because, you know, Sunday 6:30 rolls around, there's no going back, right? It's go time. And it's been a long 10 days here in Western New York, the weather and, you know, trips getting canceled and school and work and working from home and all of your, you know, kind of normal routines have been all jumbled. And it's kind of been that way really since the start of the year. And I think here in Buffalo, you sort of expect that in the wintertime, but you know, everything that sort of happened last week with the lead up to that Steelers game, the postponement, moving it to Monday night, and then the Bills going out there and handling business and kind of looking like the team we've been thinking they could be all year was, I think, a nice way to start the playoff run. But yeah, I mean, listen, getting Patrick Mahomes here, getting the Chiefs here. I said this on Chiefs radio the other day, is I think the ironic part about this is, had Kadarius Toney not been offsides, now Josh Allen would have had a minute 40 or whatever to go down and retake the lead. But if Kadarius Toney stays onsides and doesn't line up wrong, it's very possible that the Chiefs end the Bills season in week 14. Like, that was their opportunity to step on the Bills' throat, finish them, and maybe they're the two seed. Maybe they're the two or three seed in this, and instead of having to travel on the road, they're right back at Arrowhead for a divisional round game. So there is a little bit of irony there that if the Chiefs end up losing, they kind of have nobody to blame but themselves, because they had an opportunity to end the Bills season and they didn't. So listen, it's exciting. I know people here in Buffalo, Bills Mafia, are very excited to get loud and get rowdy in the stands. But there are just so many good storylines to this, Donovan, whether it's the coaching matchup. This is the first playoff game that Sean McDermott's going to be the defensive coordinator for against Andy Reid. So it's truly defensive head coach versus offensive head coach. It's Allen versus Mahomes 2.0, 3.0, whatever you want to call it. There are boundless amounts of, storylines to this game. And I think people are just kind of chapping at the bit to get going.
Well, let's get into them. And I think Chiefs fans and Chiefs teammates could blame Kadarius Toney if they were looking for someone to blame in terms of how things happened. Although I would say that Josh Allen still would have time and the ball, so who knows how that game would have ended. But I think this game will end up potentially with who has the ball last. And I think when we saw them play in that epic game in the playoffs a couple years ago, some seconds that Bills fans don't want to relive at the end, that's because of the offenses. I think this time, quite frankly, it could be because of the defenses. You mentioned that matchup between McDermott and Andy Reid, two people who know each other quite well, you know, from a personal and professional aspect and have history. What do you expect in terms of what we might see, schematically as they're battling each other?
Yeah, the Bills, about 20 minutes ago, Sean McDermott went on our station, WGR 550 in Buffalo, and had four guys listed as out. Gabriel Davis on the offensive side, Christian Benford, one of the Bills' starting corners, also out. Taylor Rapp, kind of their dime player, also will be out in this game. But what he didn't do was come out and say, Rasul Douglas or Terrell Bernard or Taron Johnson, who frankly I think are two hugely important chess pieces for what Sean McDermott wants to be able to do against this Chiefs offense. So if those guys can play, that's a huge thing. Frankly, Taron Johnson is, I think, the most important player on the Bills defense. I think he's the best. He's an all-pro this year. He's the best slot corner in football. He acts as a third linebacker and acts as one of the best slot cover corners in the league. He's very versatile. So having him will be a huge chess piece to the advantage of the Bills. So I think that this is a Chiefs offense that is averaging a full touchdown less per game this season than last year, a full 7 points down per game, just over 21 points a game, down from 28 last year. This is a Chiefs offense that has struggled all season. The Bills have been in and out of struggles offensively, right? They fired their offensive coordinator after Monday night at home against Denver, and they've turned into one of the more run-heavy teams. I think the most interesting part about this matchup and where these teams are offensively, both teams obviously 11-6 on them, but like both of these teams, their identity has almost been more run first. The Bills have been one of the most run happiest teams in the league since the change in offensive coordinator. Obviously the development and explosion of James Cook as a top five rusher in the league, I think has finally added the balance needed in this offense to take some of the pressure off of Josh Allen, which I think has been huge. And I think on the other side, Isaiah Pacheco, who did not play in the first matchup in week 14 against the Bills, he will be playing, and he is just as important to that Chiefs offense as James Cook is. So I think it's funny that both of these offenses have Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and they've slowly moved into more of a methodical ball control, run heavy style offense. Don't try to turn the ball over. But I think in this game, yes, I think whoever has the best running attack in this game will likely win. And I think that's because whoever's going to be able to run most effectively is going to be the team that gets up in this game. I think both of these teams are good front runners. They can play well from ahead. I think if one team gets behind, the Bills are probably in the best position and the most familiar position from playing from behind and being able to win down a score or two. So there's a lot that you could sort of dive into in terms of scheme, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be, can the Bills slow down the run game of the Chiefs? Can they hem Patrick Mahomes inside the pocket, not let him extend plays outside the pocket, because that's really where he hurts you. The same can be said about Josh Allen. And, you know, can the Bills get to Patrick Mahomes? They got to him five times in their first matchup in week 14. These are the number two and the number five in sacks this year. The Chiefs are number two in the NFL in sacks this year. The Bills are number five. So both teams can get after the quarterback, and I expect it to be a sort of a big turning point in this game for sure.
You know, much was made last week in terms of having the game postponed. Does that benefit the Bills, or does it benefit Steelers? Because the Steelers were at home and able to get an extra day of treatment and go to the facility where, you know, many of the Bills theoretically shouldn't have been on the road and doing things, which is why the game was postponed. I wasn't sure who had a tangible benefit there. I was sure that it was advantage Chiefs once they advanced, because you got built in 48 extra hours, give or take, of rest and potential preparation. The biggest question, you know, since the first third of the season until now for the Bills was just an inventory of who is going to be available to play, both, you know, from starters and backups. So where are we now, offensively, defensively? What do we know in terms of practice participants and what we might be able to expect on Sunday night?
So Gabriel Davis, he was listed as out, so the Bills won't be they'll be without their number two wide receiver. But Khalil Shakir has stepped in very, very well for this team. Frankly, even if Gabriel Davis is in, you know, I'm not sure that even cuts into the snap count for Gabriel Davis. And obviously the emergence of their two tight ends, especially last week. I mean, Dalton Kincaid probably should have had two touchdowns in that game. He led the team in receiving yards, and Dawson Knox had the first touchdown. So they'll be able to replace the production from Gabriel Davis. And frankly, they'll miss him most in the run blocking game. Davis is one of the best run blocking wide receivers in the NFL, but it's the defensive side of the ball. That's really where they've struggled all year, right? No Matt Milano, obviously he's not coming back anytime soon. They don't expect him to make a return this season off of IR after breaking his leg in week five in London. But the big injuries to me are Taron Johnson. And it looks like he's coming off a concussion. He's back in concussion protocol. The short week certainly complicates that a little bit. I would be surprised if Taron Johnson does not play. Same can be said for Rasul Douglas, who got a knee injury in the week 18 game in Miami. Christian Benford, he was listed as out. He's the Bills' other starting corner. Dane Jackson will slot in for the Bills. You don't really miss a beat. I think the Bills have one of the deepest cornerback rooms in the league. They lost their top three corners going into that Pittsburgh game. They had Dane Jackson and Kyer Elam, who only played in one game all season long. Kyer gets the interception in the end zone against the Steelers and gives up like two catches in that game. So the Bills are prepared to lose corners, although you want they I don't think they can replace Taron Johnson. He's the most important aspect and piece of that defense. But Rasul Douglas is right there. And with Rasheed Rice kind of really coming on the scene here late in the season, has 130, 140 yards last week against the Dolphins. I think it'd be really important to have Douglas back and healthy. I think Douglas could have played last week, but I think they wanted to give him that extra week of rest, and I think that'll be big for them. So I think they're going to be, you know, I think Terrell Bernard's going to play, but I think he's going to be a little banged up, maybe a little slow. He's got a squeaky wheel, but I think all in all, the Bills will be fairly healthy. Here's the most important part. They're most healthy on the back end at safety. Both veteran safeties, Poyer and Hyde, are healthy, available, playing well. But they are as healthy as they've been all year on the defensive line. DaQuan Jones back from IR. He was also lost in that week five game in London. You know, Gregor Rousseau is back to 100% after kind of dealing with an ankle injury all year. And they've got, you know, Linval Joseph in the middle, and Ed Oliver's healthy, and Gregor Rousseau's healthy, and Floyd's healthy, and Epinesa's healthy. So their depth and the top of the lineup at defensive line is 100%, and I think that'll be a huge thing, a huge recipe for stopping this Chiefs offense for sure.
You know, it's pretty easy to just make the comparison. Oh, this is the Brady Manning of our era, which, yeah. I mean, like, there's also Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow and now CJ Stroud. Like, I don't know if it's that clean, but they have a personal relationship and they've had some epic battles. In terms of Josh Allen and his legacy and maybe even just mainstream notoriety, how big of a matchup is this for him in that ilk?
You know, I've heard the word legacy get thrown around this week, and I don't totally disagree. I think this is a guy. I just don't agree that Josh Allen is the player with the most pressure on this week to win. Mostly because, you know, Lamar Jackson has one playoff win in his career. They are the number one seed. If they lose to Houston at home, I think Lamar Jackson's under more pressure right now to win than Josh Allen is. But here's what I'll say. Josh Allen's 27 years old. He's not going to be playing at this level, especially as a runner, forever. I think that the pressure for him is that he has played pretty incredible football in the playoffs. If he goes out there, throws for 300 yards, has three touchdowns and adds 70 on the ground and another touchdown and the Bills lose, I don't understand why that would be looked at as it's Josh Allen not able to get over the hump and not this Bills team. And I think, fair or unfair, in professional sports, specifically football, there is no position in sports that takes more heat when it's unearned and sometimes gets the most praise even when it's unearned than the quarterback position. It just is that one position in all of sports that's always on the spotlight. And Josh Allen, because they have not gotten to a Super Bowl, because they have not won an AFC championship game, and they seem to kind of hit their head every time they play the Chiefs in the playoffs, and obviously last year the Bengals. Listen, I think this is the matchup the NFL really wants. These are the two best quarterbacks in the league, and that's no disrespect to Joe Burrow, who has gotten to a Super Bowl and hasn't won, but has gotten to a Super Bowl, has won an AFC championship. But I think when you're talking about two guys that can do things at a level that, you know, no one in the NFL has really seen, it's Allen and Mahomes. So I think there is a little bit of that legacy conversation on the line, but I think at the end of the day, if the Bills play a complete game, if they get that performance defensively that they've gotten really for the second half of the entire season, and they get the performance that Josh Allen had last week, that he's really kind of had in this run towards the end of the season, I think the Bills should be victorious and probably head to Baltimore for an AFC championship, which would be a rematch of the divisional round 2 years ago when the Bills went to the AFC championship game and Taron Johnson had the pick six, the famous pick six to put that Ravens team away. So legacy's at stake, no doubt. But if there's anyone up for it, Josh Allen plays big. I mean, he plays his best on the biggest stages. And that's always what I've really appreciated about Allen.
You know, I think Allen will have other opportunities, so I don't know necessarily. And to your point, if he's under nearly as much pressure as Lamar Jackson should be, given the things they've changed in Baltimore to give him a better fighting chance in the postseason, I do know, though, if things don't go well, there may be some pressure on Sean McDermott. But I think, quite frankly, some interesting questions for Brandon Bean, given the age of the roster and some of the cap questions that they may have moving forward. What does this window look like, you know, moving forward, if this team isn't able to get over the hump?
It's a good question. I think that they're probably sitting in the best opportunity they've had in this sort of window that they've created for themselves since Josh Allen's been a starting quarterback. And I think it's a better window than they had last year. I think it's a better window than they had in 2020. The reason being is they don't have to go through Joe Burrow. I mentioned earlier that this Chiefs offense is sort of limped to the finish line, 21 points per game. This is the weakest group of pass catchers with a declining Travis Kelce. If you can't beat this Chiefs team now, I think the question will be, can you ever beat them when it matters? You can beat them in the regular season, but you can't beat them when it counts. If this team can't be beat, it's going to feel like they'll never be able to be beat. So I think, you know, from the outlook perspective, yeah, I mean, Hyde and Poyer probably are looking at their last leg this year. Hyde's on an expiring contract. Poyer's got one more year, but they're going to have some salary cap stuff to work on next year, some extensions. But offensively, they're going to lose Gabe Davis, and they're not going to re-sign him. He's going to become a free agent. He's probably going to get a decent contract. He won't be back, but they're young on offensive line, which I think is really important. Defensive line, I think they've got some decisions to make. But, man, Ed Oliver coming out and having a career year after signing his contract, which kind of looks like a deal for them now, I think is huge. Greg Rousseau is still young and really still developing. He had a career year, in pressures and pass rush win weight. So I think for me, yeah, there's some veterans. But I think at the same time, that this is a team that's going to have some flexibility. The TV deal coming through and the salary cap expected to take a big jump next year helps the Bills. And they're always going to have the levers, the parachutes in Josh Allen's contract to restructure and move some money around. So I think Brandon Bean has done a great job adding guys. I think their previous draft class has been fantastic. I mean, Christian Benford's their starting corner. He was a six-round pick last year. They're really liking Terrell Bernard. Had a all-pro caliber season. Four and a half sacks, four interceptions, led the team in tackles, fumble recoveries, forced fumbles, the whole thing. He's in the second year of his contract. He was a third round pick. Dalton Kincaid is really turning into a legitimate weapon, has the rookie record for catches by a tight end in Bills history. So they've got a really nice mix of veteran pieces and young pieces. They just need to continue drafting and developing the way they have the last 2 years. And I think they'll be in a great position moving forward. But there's no doubt to me, Donovan, that this year, this game, these next two games, this is their best opportunity to get to a Super Bowl, and it may never be easier than it is this year. That's why I think it's so important to take advantage.
The other aspect that I mentioned, McDermott, and it's funny how quickly things can change. You know, what was swirling about him and some unfortunate anecdotal stories that he used in his past around the last time that Kansas City faced Buffalo, and you get that win at the end, and now the team obviously has been on a run since, and you know he's called great defense since. He's in a much different position, you know, publicly. But do you think at all his tenure there is somewhat in question based off of, you know, the playoff results this year?
I think there is some pressure. There's no doubt. But I also think that it's not the end all be all. I think you saw the coaching job that he's done after that story came out. He's really, the team is galvanized. The team has rallied around him. And I think that's been a really big, it's been a big marker for them. So I think for me, I don't think it's a, you know, win or out situation this year, but and they just signed an extension too. And I think that's something to keep in mind throughout this whole process is, you know, had he not signed that extension, I might wonder if this is it. But I think for me right now, he's still, it would have to go really wrong for him. And I don't really even see a scenario where if they don't win this year, he's out. I think he's one of the steadiest coaches in the league, and he's been, and you know, I don't think there's a winner you're out kind of mandate right now, but it certainly feels like the window is closing ever so slightly. But with Josh Allen, guys, you know, like this window will never fully firmly shut with Josh Allen at quarterback.
You know, it also seems very long ago, but it was only the offseason where McDermott and Josh Allen were giving like somewhat awkward updates about the state of the relationship with Stephon Diggs. And it just seemed to not make any sense from the outside looking in. I'm curious in terms of your perspective, what it was like covering it at the time. But really, when you look at this offense under Joe Brady, Diggs hasn't been the same factor, you know, consistently as he has been in the past. His utilization, I'm sure he'll see a lot of Sneed, you know, on Sunday. His utilization, you know, for this offense to get to where they want to go, what do you see from him being a focal point on Sunday?
Yeah, he needs to be more involved down the field. They really haven't been able to connect on the big play. I think a lot of the conversation would be a moot point if they hit two or three of the ones where he's literally running wide open and Josh Allen slightly overthrows him. Like, I think a lot of the conversation sort of goes away. I know a lot of the offseason stuff, and listen, him and Josh Allen are very close. He is one of the best competitors that I've ever really seen to play the game. He is deeply competitive. He cares about winning. All he wants to do is win. And as long as they're winning, he really, I believe it when he says he doesn't care what his stat line looks like if the Bills are winning. And they've been winning, even though his stats have not been what they were the first half of the season. But this team runs through him. Defenses play this Bills offense based on where Stephon Diggs is lined up and how he's being utilized in the game. So his role moving forward is crucial. It's integral to them getting to and winning a Super Bowl. But I think the thing with Joe Brady that he's brought in is a better running attack, but B, you're seeing guys like Khalil Shakir, you're seeing guys like Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox and some ancillary weapons step up. And I think that's been the most important part from sustainability perspective for this team moving forward is they need other guys to step up, and they're finally getting that.
You know, I want to talk about the team, but I also want to talk about, you know, the city, and we get Buffalo news here, certainly in Toronto and various parts of Canada. We can see the reports, but it's different to be there and to live it. And, you know, Buffalo has lived through many, catastrophic scenarios over the last couple of years, it seems. What is the town like in terms of getting back to some level of normalcy, knowing what the weather events are going to be for the upcoming days? How are things operating in and around what will be a big football game on Sunday?
Yeah, I think it's, it's not quite normal yet. I know a lot of people are still working from home. It's still snowing somehow. but listen, when Sunday, that 6 a.m. alarm goes off on Sunday, and you crack your first beer here in Western New York, everything else kind of goes out the window. I think the city's really excited about hosting this game, getting Patrick Mahomes his first road playoff game in his career here in Buffalo. It's for me, that's the most important thing for this team, is just the getting on and getting this game going. I think that'll be, everything sort of goes to the side once the game kicks off.
Yeah, well, we're hoping that first beer is a Canadian beer, a nice Labatt or a Molson or something. You know, the other debate that's somewhat been had, or at least conversation, is, well, I mean, should you have an outdoor stadium in this vicinity? Where exactly in the town and the city should the stadium be? I mean, that is somewhat of a moot point because there's a stadium on the way. But, you know, locally, has minds changed? Has conversation changed? Has lobbying happened in terms of, you know, what that looks like and the excitement for a potential new building in the future?
Yeah, listen, a dome wouldn't have, you know, stopped that game from being postponed, you know, because it's really more so about the conditions of the roads leading into it, the travel ban that was in place, getting the Steelers in safely, you know, like all of those things were really more of the reason the game was canceled, not the field conditions. The field conditions were ended up being fine, you know, but at the end of the day, I think what ends up happening, to me, the stadium they're going to build is going to be covering the stands, which I think is the most important part. But it's Buffalo. It was always going to be an outdoor stadium in Orchard Park, not downtown. And I think because of that, the open air makes sense to me. Would I have loved a dome? Sure. But I think it's this city loves the kind of elements that we get to play in every once in a while. And the last couple of years, we've just gotten pounded with pretty rare weather events that's dropped, you know, feet of snow within a day or two. So that's not really, I think, goes into the plans. But a dome would not have stopped the game from being postponed. And I think that's maybe the most important point to make about it. But, yeah, no, I think a lot of people here love the open-air stadium.
Well, I just hope in the plans is a very heated, warm press box for you moving forward with some nice press box treats.
Yes.
Lastly, before I let you go, really, if I'm being honest, the one thing I do want to talk to you about, like, this is the penance that I pay in talking about the actual football game, which I love, to talk to you about this. Nate, you just recently watched the Connor's Wedding episode of Succession. Where have you been?
I did.
Where have you been, Nate? Like, how are you this late to it? How did you not know what happened? Because, like, there were literal news articles about what happened, which evidently, if you haven't watched it, maybe others haven't, so I'm not going to ruin what happened, although I feel like the entire world knows. But how did you stay in a cocoon and not know what happened or how it happened this late? And how did you experience what I think, for me, it was one of the, if not best, episodes of TV in our lifetime?
Yeah, ignorance in this case is a strong suit for me. So I was able to stay away from it. But so it's funny. I tried getting the Succession multiple times. Started it, it just did not hit for me. So I finally, I think I was sick maybe a couple weeks ago. I started watching it. I got HBO Max and I started watching it. And then I just got hooked. And I watched the entire season in like a day. The first season, and then I'm almost to the completion of the series. Yeah, I was just luckily I was able to stay away from spoilers, you know. But the show is called Succession, so I did figure at some point somewhere a patriarch would potentially pass away and have to pass on the family business to somebody else. But it's the reason I like the show is there really is no rootable figure. They're all kind of terrible humans and villains. And I actually have liked that about the show. It's like every show is about which person's going to backstab their family and their kin the best. So yeah, I'm excited about the final season as it closes up here. But yeah, it's become one of my favorite shows. And I go on these things, Donovan, where I like fall in love with shows and I binge them. So I did that with my other favorite show that's on Showtime is Billions. And then I moved from Billions into Succession. And yeah, it's been, because here's the thing. I don't like waiting weeks between episodes. So I'd rather wait for a whole series to end and then binge watch each season as quickly as possible, rather than waiting for every Sunday for these shows to come out. So
fair enough. Most of us wait for a season to end and then binge the season. You waited for the
series.
Yeah, yeah. You take it to the extreme, which I respect and I rate. Listen, I can't really throw stones from a glass house because me and my wife slowly are prodding through The Crown, which we have not finished. That's partially because we only get an hour at night because we have young kids and we just fall asleep on the couch. But I can't wait for you to finish Succession. I actually know how The Crown finishes. We all do. But I can't wait for you to finish Succession. When you do get there, we should have a further talk on how it ends because I would love your take on that. Enjoy the binging if you have time. Suspect if the Bills make a extended playoff push and you're heading to Las Vegas, you might not have much disposable time, but we really appreciate either way you taking the time for us today.
My pleasure, man. Anytime for you guys.
So that was Nate Geary at Nate Geary Sports is his handle on X. And don't be a jerk and tweet him and tell him how Succession ends. Like, that is something you should not do. What you should do is go and tell him the show that he should watch and binge watch after Succession. And while you're at it, tell me and tell show as well, because we are consumers of content also. We love great, great prestige TV. And when it comes to film, when it comes to television show, no one knows that space better than you. What did you make of the fact that Nate still hasn't finished Succession? Like, awards have been handed out already, and he is still, you know, figuring out what's going to happen with, you know, Madsen and the Gojo deal.
Yeah, I was genuinely surprised. I'm more impressed that he managed to avoid spoilers.
Impossible. Because, no, yeah, I have no idea how he did that.
That's what I mean. Like, Succession is probably one of the few, like, monoculture TV shows that we've gotten in the last, like, couple of years or whatever. And, gosh, like, it was everywhere.
What,
like,
should I say what happened?
Yeah, people. No, yeah, it's not a spoiler anymore.
Okay. Well, I mean, evidently it is, because if I said it while our last guest was still on the air, I would ruin the rest of the season for him. But
I think it's like a week is like the moratorium on spoilers for TV episodes.
Well, there were newspapers that did not wait.
No, it's
that
true.
Reported that, and I'm going to say it. And if you haven't watched, then thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Please like, favorite, share, subscribe, all that stuff, and hurry up and watch. In 3, 2, 1, there are newspapers that reported that Logan Roy died. I hope you stopped listening if you didn't know that. I apologize. But
they had, like, obituaries for him.
They had obituaries, which, again, saying it back sounds ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, listen, it is an occupational hazard to not watch a show with the rest of the world. I fully accept that risk. I have a wife with a limited attention span. If a show doesn't catch her in the first couple episodes, she has no problem quitting. I'm not like that. I power through.
Well, you have to see it through.
I have to see it through. Okay. I have to finish it. And so, well, what happens is you have hanging chads all over my PVR of shows that are half watched and not fully watched, and you went to this far in the episode, but then my wife fell asleep, and then you tried to finish the episode, and she's like, ah, you know what? It's been a couple weeks. I don't care about that show anymore. And so I am doing literal PVR maintenance all the time. Can I get to the end of this series? Okay, well, now it's not on the PVR anymore. Thank you, Rogers Ignite. It's on demand. I can still watch it because there's not a lot of PVR space because we have all these shows in development, if you will, working in progress. That is my consumption scenario. I mean, it just sounds stressful talking about it. And it's just, these things are supposed to alleviate your stress at the end of the day.
That's really funny. You know, it's funny. My wife and I, we pick one show that we neither of us have seen before or we watched like ages ago. Something that looks super low stakes, like the lowest possible stakes TV show. And we binge watch that while we eat and so on until like one of us or both of us falls asleep on the couch. And like, for example, we binge watched How Much Your Mother. And now we're in the process of binge watching The Big Bang Theory. And
these are shows that you had already watched and you're watching them again?
I guess I had watched like Big Bang or How I Met Your Mother when it came out, like when I was in university, and same with her. But we had never seen it again, so we kind of rewatching it, just kind of like have something on very like low stakes while we're eating food or whatever. I'd never seen The Big Bang Theory, and I'm almost ashamed to say I quite enjoy it, but it's pretty funny. My viewing experience on television is I think quite different from yours.
Yeah, it is quite different. So here's a. Before we go, a television viewing experience question for you that is somewhat adjacent to the conversation we're having, but yet separate. It is my youngest son, Rowan's, second birthday on Sunday. Having family over at the house. That timing of the party, as you know, many parents listening to this know, is directly related to the nap schedule.
Sure.
So he gets up at, you know, 2:30. It's a 3 to 6 party, ladies and gentlemen, because at 6, we're into the dinner, bed, bath routine to get those kids down so that I can have some sort of life at the end of the night and maybe watch a show. So that's the window, 3 to 6. As you well know, there's going to be high stakes, high leverage football going on. 3 to 6, we're talking about Mahomes Allen. We just literally talked about it. It is the game to watch. If you could pick one game this week, that's the one. And so I have a real life conundrum. Do I have the game on in the background, in the surround sound? It's got it going on. When I hear, you know, the octaves of Jim Nance's voice change, I quickly find a TV to figure out what's going on. Or maybe it'll be Romo's voice change. And so I'm watching the game knowing that it is a real live scenario that at any moment, any time, one of my children or the various children over at my house to celebrate this birthday may just take the remote and say, you know, it's Blippi time. Actually, Gabby's Dollhouse. That's what I want right now. The Wiggles, Miss Rachel, let's go immediately. Do I do that, which is like not an optimum way to view anything? Or do I just say, you know what, shut it down, blinders on, I'm going to be where my feet are, I'm just going to be at the party, and I'm going to PVR the game and watch it late, knowing that I cannot open my phone, got to turn the push alerts off, I got to literally flip the phone face down, can't talk to anybody, can't take any phone calls. What is the best approach?
Well, first of all, we haven't convened a dad court in quite some time.
That is true. Yeah, we play the sound, yeah.
All rise. Dad Jerry is in session.
I do want to say that I have actually seen this play out with my own two eyes, because I have a lot of cousins, Donovan, who are significantly older than me. Some of them are in their like mid to late 50s now, and they have kids who are like teenagers. So I remember when I was a little younger and they were a little younger and these kids were like 2 and 3 and so on. The first scenario you outlined, kind of just making it the best of the situation and having the game on with essentially like no sound while the party is happening around everyone, sure, is essentially what my family has done for, I feel like, a whole generation. So I feel like I can safely say that's probably better. I've also observed you always be on your phone, so I feel like it'd be hard for you to like completely turn it off.
I feel like that's not a compliment.
No, you know what? That's just part of that's part of our industry. It's part of our lives. So I think it'd be too difficult to stay away. But then again, you know what? You have two young kids and they're going to be all a bunch of other young kids. Maybe you'll have your hands full.
Yeah, I'm just going to blame the guests. I'm going to listen. We have people here who want to watch the game.
My brother-in-law really wants to watch the Bills game.
My uncle. Yeah, you know what? Listen, I got to be a good host. And so maybe there'll be a viewing experience for football, you know, in the basement. And a viewing experience of, you know, random child YouTube videos on the main screen. We'll see how we make out. Wish me luck.
Good luck. I will be at the Bills game.
That's right.
On Sunday. So I will, just in case, I will do my best not to text you while I'm there.
That's right. The moral of the story for this episode is no spoilers, ladies and gentlemen. No matter when you're watching or how you're watching, enjoy the games. We certainly will be covering what happens in the playoffs as we get closer to the Super Bowl this year in Las Vegas. Thanks for listening.